Welcome to another Daily Oil Bulletin Energy Excellence Special Presentation. I'm Wendy L., Director of Strategic Partnerships and Industry Development for the Glacier Resource Innovation Group. We're a group of Glacier-owned businesses all working in either trade media, market intelligence, or special projects, all supporting the energy and mining sectors. Today's discussion is looking at excellence in exporting. This category looks to recognize the most successful Canadian energy exporters of 2019 competing on the global stage. Three subcategories were judged on export revenues, annual export growth, new market expansion, and unique export partnerships or collaboration. The subcategories focus on the exporting of products or services in the following areas. Number one, advanced technologies. Number two, clean tech products and services, and number three, oil field and professional services. After announcing our champion, we'll speak to a panel of industry experts who will share their insights on what we feel make these organizations or their approaches to new market expansion true demonstrations of excellence. We'll also speak to what businesses need to continue to do, or perhaps start doing, to ensure exporting excellence tomorrow. So let's meet our panelists. We have a distinguished group in front of us. It will bring out an outstanding conversation. So our first panelist is Tim Haslett. Tim is when I go into the bios, I think it's also important for those listening to this session to really listen to the expertise from all these three folks. It'll really, as we carry out the discussion about what we need to do as an organization for excellence, important. All three of these folks have outstanding expertise and are very, very much part of the shifts currently happening in the sector. So I'll go into the bios and I would just encourage everyone to really listen to the great work they've done today. So Tim Haslett's a global energy solutions leader with a solid track record of proactively developing and executing large-scale strategic industry and government projects that increase international market share, investment, and competitiveness, something we definitely need. He's a domestic and international energy-focused professional with 20 years plus of unique executive and senior management experience in strategic, both private and public priority sector positions spanning five continents and focused on all aspects of Canada's energy sector. He's highly educated and integrated with most energy-related associations in Alberta and currently sits or advises to 20-plus strategic business and technical industry associations and committees. We all thought we were busy. He was the managing director of the Ministry of Alberta Economic Development and Trade's office in Mexico City from 2011 to 2014. And that office is actually the provincial government's only trade office in all Latin America. He started working on drilling and service rigs at an early age and has also worked on offshore drilling and workover platforms. He is a three-time award recipient of the Premier's Award of Excellence. And today you can find him working with various business and technical industry associations and leading up the efforts for the Canadian Energy Industries Council. I've had the pleasure of working with Tim on several occasions, and I'm thrilled to have him with us today as one of our three panelists. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be part of the Energy Excellence Awards. I enjoyed reading the submissions and look forward to the discussion today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Our second panelist is Bimal Mehta. Bimal is the Senior Vice President, Energy and Mining Intelligence with the Glacier Resource Innovation Group. And this is the parent company for our Daily Oil Bulletin. He leads Glacier in the areas of industry and market analysis. Over the last few years, he has been very close to the areas of global growth opportunities and diversification opportunities. He has led energy outlooks, oil field services outlooks, our Going Global initiative, which was done to actually assist energy service companies looking at global markets, and was also instrumental in the digital oil innovation work for our organization. He brings a depth of experience in the areas of business strategy, operational excellence, marketing, and sales effectiveness. Bimal is a professional engineer with a Bachelor of Science and a Master's of Science in Chemical Engineering from the University of Alberta and an MBA from Queen's University. So welcome, Bimal.
Well, thank you, Wendy, and it's great to be here. This year's Energy Excellence Awards has probably been our best one yet, with just some outstanding companies with fantastic stories. So it's going to be exciting to talk about some of those organizations today.
Great. Thank you. And our third panelist is David Nygaard. David is the Global Trade Director of Energy with the Export Development Canada. He leads EDC's relationships and its activities with its foreign oil and gas clients globally and contributes to EDC's strategy and activities in the sector. He identifies opportunities for Canadian companies with his assigned accounts, which includes companies in the US, Mexico, and Colombia, including Alpha, Energia, ConocoPhillips, Cotemar, Ecopetrol, and Noble Energy. David is passionate about helping Canadian companies grow and succeed. This passion comes from almost 20 years in the energy sector, including 6 years at the Canadian Embassy in Mexico City and 5 years in Houston with Alberta-based oilfield services companies. This allowed him to identify the right people in associations, government, and the private sector and bring them together to create high-value connections. It's all about connections, isn't it? David never tires of trying to see how well his jokes translate from English into Spanish, French, and Portuguese. I tell you, we need humor in today's day and age, don't we? Welcome, David.
Thanks, Wendy. It's a real pleasure to be here this morning.
Well, then let's turn our attention to the finalists in the Advanced Technologies category. The finalists showcased by the Daily Oil Bulletin in this category are Ambient, Interface Fluidics Limited, and RS Energy Group. The champion for advanced technologies exporting is Interface Fluidics for its improved fracture fluid performance screening with a microfluidic chip technology. The so-called lab on a chip technology has cut costs in half associated with processes like pore flooding that can determine aspects like permeability and interactions between the fluids and the rock. So congratulations, Interface Fluidics. So let's turn our attention and have some discussions about the marketplace and what folks are up against in the advanced technologies world and sort of what's required around the world and where we're sitting. So have a couple of questions prepared for the panel. And let's start very general. Let's start about, you know, Tim, David, you've done work around the world. What do you all feel will be the key technology needs of 2020 and 2021? Feel free to answer either generally or if you feel that kind of certain regions have certain needs over others, we can chat about that too. But essentially, would love to hear sort of your thoughts on that advanced technology need of tomorrow. Who'd like to go first?
I can go first, Wendy. This is David. I think that what we're seeing is that there's new interest or renewed interest in conventionals, in heavy oil and offshore around the world. And in some of the customers that EDC has, in, for example, the ones that I'm responsible for in the Americas, we can notice, you know, some trends in terms of some of the asks that we've had from them over the past few months. And, you know, for example, artificial intelligence is high on most companies' lists. You do see some differences whether you're talking about upstream, midstream, or downstream. We tend to spend most of our time looking at upstream and midstream companies. And both upstream and midstream companies are looking to apply AI to what they do to optimize processes, to optimize production, to model things downhole, digital twin, you know, which also gets in, you know, has applications in downstream and petrochemicals and so on. And, you know, remote inspection and remote monitoring seems to be of interest, you know, before COVID and especially since COVID as well. You know, we've had customers that, and Canadian companies that might have technologies like thermal imaging technologies that are looking at ways, you know, that same technology can be used maybe on an offshore platform. And by doing so, minimize human footprint, which brings us into automation and robotics, which was already in full swing, but which people seem to be looking at as well. Like we've been looking at things like robotics for automated cleaning of warehouses. And of course, companies are looking at things like AUVs, autonomous underwater vehicles for subsea inspection. emissions and flaring has been an interest that multiple companies of ours, clients of ours have raised, and micro LNG as well, which is, you know, fits into flaring, emissions, compressed natural gas. These are all different ways of getting at the same problem of associated gas. So maybe I'll stop it there, and Tim can take a stab at it too.
Yeah, Tim, go ahead. Do you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, I think I agree wholeheartedly with items that David's mentioned. Probably see some similarities in our answers here. I'm a strong believer of the niche technologies and services on the methane emissions reduction side was well in swing prior to COVID. And I think it's going to, the fugitive gas capture, the recovery, the reuse, the alternative to the flaring, and probably, in my opinion, the largest will pertain to, as David also mentioned, the monitoring aspect and the analysis aspect of this piece and getting into that digital space. Innotech here in Calgary recently, alongside PTAC, had four companies with non-cement plugging technologies. They all put on excellent presentations downtown Calgary just prior to COVID. And of course, on the land reclamation side, the water side, moving into kind of a little bit of an unfortunate scenario here in Alberta and elsewhere is well, decommissionings and abandonments are going to be front and center, at least for a little while, until things start to stabilize and the oil industry gets back on its feet. The whole repurposing, I believe, will be very strong. The lowest cost solution for marginal fields and reactivation at certain points in time will be big. Like David, I'm a strong believer on the digital oil field technology side. In fact, I believe this holds the nearest term solution to decrease the cost of production in Alberta, here in Canada, and also increase that environmental performance. And because Alberta has that such a strong atmosphere or ecosystem in terms of technology development and commercialization already in place, I believe that our digital oil field technologies subsector will be the next piece of the puzzle that decreases the cost of production in Alberta even more, increases our environmental performance, and ultimately will be our next largest exportable packages that we take to the global marketplace.
Fantastic comments. You know, what's so interesting between both of you is you've brought out the reality that in today's marketplace and tomorrow, faster, cleaner, and cheaper is really the definition of what drives better, doesn't it? It drives that whole energy around it. Well, with so much business grinding to a halt during the coronavirus slowdowns, like, we continue to see the effects that occur with the movement of people and products that are in jeopardy. Like, as these organizations are working to, whether you're on the operator side or you're on the tech and innovator side, you're working together to improve these efficiencies and try to keep business going. So would love to know what advice any of you, maybe we'll start with BMO this time to have you an opportunity to speak. What advice can you give to companies to ensure that they have measures in place to better position themselves to respond to either pent-up demand or swings in demand that may occur post-COVID in different parts of the world?
Well, thanks, Wendy. We're in an unprecedented time. We've seen a massive change to all of our work and home lives as we've been asked to socially distance and shelter in place and work from home. We're also seeing simultaneously a unprecedented collapse in oil demand as people have reduced their driving and flying and other uses of oil. So as we look at the market right now, we're dealing with kind of a double hit. One is people are not able to be out as often, be able to meet and interact with customers, get out in front and have those meetings that you normally do. You're also dealing with a situation where capital expenditure budgets are being cut and many of your customers are now moving into cash preservation mode and then delaying projects that would have otherwise gone forward this year. That being said, we do think that this is a fantastic time to position yourself for future growth. You know, certainly one of the big advantages of our current environment is that people have actually become much easier to reach than before. One thing I'm hearing a lot about are just the fact that you're able to reach out to people and, in fact, connect with them on LinkedIn and at times be able to establish new relationships. It's the beginning that it could be the foundations of something bigger. You know, if you know, to give a few concrete examples, I'm aware of a few companies that have taken this time to identify new sales agents in overseas markets. Those sales agents are looking for new opportunities, and exporters from Canada are now able to connect and, you know, meet some people that they may be able to work with down the road as they try to expand into different markets. It's also a great opportunity to look for market adjacencies. And many companies now are looking at their technologies and finding new applications and new ways of using those products and perhaps new markets. So both of those areas position organizations really well for a future post-COVID. And, you know, markets are starting to open up a little bit, and we'll be back to normal within a few months, or at least a reasonable level of normal.
Outstanding comments. I mean, setting up into that agent network, finding new uses for your technology, that's outstanding. Did any of the other panelists want to add to that?
Tim, I went first last time, so you go this time if you want.
I don't have too much to add to this. Wholeheartedly agree with BMO's comments. I think it's a time where companies can kind of look back at the larger picture, get prepared, really nail down their competitive advantage, know what markets, international markets, make the most sense to them, why this market has more potential than that market. It's a time to get targeted. It's a time to get poised and ready to strategically move forward.
Well, thanks, Tim. Yes, David here. So I think just to pick up on BMO's and Tim's comments, and speaking, you know, someone working at EDC, like, I think market diversification is certainly something to look at and consider. You know, with EDC, the markets that we're in depends on what sector we're looking at. But, you know, in our particular program in connection financing, we have active clients. Sorry, did you hear an echo there?
I did, yeah. So maybe... in our market position.
Okay. Yeah, we have active clients in the US, Mexico, Colombia, Australia. And we're always looking at prospects in other markets as well. You know, another idea is just to fully leverage government support and in-market support. So even, you know, for a lot of EDC staff are working from home right now. In fact, most of us are. But some of our staff are still out in the international offices. And there's the Trade Commissioner Network, which has offices in something like 180 markets. So we've already planned and already spoken with them to lean more heavily on them this year. The government of Alberta has a number of offices, and their presence is especially strong in Asia. So you could think of them as well. And it, like BMO said, like, you can leverage your LinkedIn network. A good friend of mine, you know, said in Calgary, said to me a few months ago, he said, like, leverage your network or take care of your network, and they'll take care of you. And so realizing that a number of people are unemployed and so on, and that these are really tough times, don't hesitate for one second to reach out to your friends and to your network. You know, you can leverage resources like EDC and BDC for working capital and insurance. And just to, you know, don't assume that your clients aren't interested in hearing from you right now. I think is the key word is value. Like, if as long as you're delivering value and you're bringing and putting a useful article or solution or insight in front of them, people are always willing to hear from you. That would be my thought on that.
That's outstanding. When we talk about networks, it's so interesting, you know, depend upon who you are, whether you're the organization itself, developing the technology, you are an organization that's actually buying and making use of the technology, or you're on the funding side, or you're another part of sort of that broader innovation ecosystem that actually brought the technology to place. That's an interesting thing that we've done a lot of work with at Glacier in helping to really drive efficiency in the end-to-end innovation ecosystem. So for advanced technologies to be tested and validated first before sort of, to have those trials behind them that are proven out and to actually then scale up is that's where that magic happens. And so a question sort of right, maybe following right on the heels of that comment about the importance of kind of leveraging the network is, when we look at that innovation ecosystem, one way to look at it is to sort of maybe deconstruct it into kind of on the supply side or the on the demand side. And when I mean supply side, so as the innovators themselves and sometimes the operators are starting to develop, you know, what are the technologies that need us to be faster, better, smarter, cheaper? Where are the predictive requirements? Where are we lacking in terms of measurement or monitoring in the field? When we kind of identify those areas where we could be more efficient and we could be cleaner, there's the opportunity to kind of ensure that the labs and the universities and that whole ecosystem around that are nice and efficient. Then there's the demand side, which is a lot of what we're talking about. Those folks that we're working with all around the world, those resources that we're using, and their ability to connect us with understanding around the varying regulatory frameworks, the political structures that are governing how we bring new technologies into different regions. I'd love for you guys to talk a little bit, you know, on either side of that, like whether it's the supply side where we're actually developing the technologies or whether it's the demand side where we've got proven technologies and we're just wanting to sort of get them into the hands of the folks that want them. Where do you think that you know, moving forward, and whether it's because of COVID or not, what kind of advice can you give to sort of draw even more efficiency than what we're getting today?
I could certainly start off on that one, Wendy. I mean, if I had to kind of look at the first part of the question, I guess the what would drive the efficiency and innovation into our innovation ecosystem, I believe top three pieces would be collaboration, collaboration, collaboration. I could go on and on and on about our large and highly innovative innovation and ecosystem. I'm a big fan of it. I just to pick a couple, Alberta Innovates is excellent. They work with a number of different entities all across Alberta, universities included. They look at both the incremental gains and the big game changer type pieces. I'm a huge fan of the Petroleum Technology Alliance of Canada's collaboration model that they have in place. Listeners today haven't done so already, the PTAX Digital Innovation Network, acronym DIN, is something that they could or should somehow, some way partake in. One of the largest projects coming out of DIN is Beyond Visual Line of Sight drone, and looking at some of this remote well site and facilities monitoring. And when you get into this airspace and you use these technologies that make sense, we're going to start to see billions of dollars in savings when they're rolled out. And how does this translate over into the agriculture sector, into the engineering and construction sector, and other sectors as well? And then to tackle it from the supply and demand side, I guess on the supply side, maybe, possibly there are somehow some way we could move to more alignment amongst our many, many players in Alberta's unique innovation ecosystem, possibly to identify the biggest challenges. So we have multiple groups and multiple organizations collaborating to solve those targeted paramount challenges. Maybe on the demand side, I'm a big believer in when you get into the high tech, high specialization type sectors that companies really do need to find a model to somehow, some way, better, more often direct represent themselves in these international markets. And lastly, I believe because we have this unique innovation and commercialization ecosystem in Alberta, why couldn't other international jurisdictions that have, for example, heavy oil and tight oil and shale gas and are challenged on the air, water, and land side of things, why couldn't they also participate in some of these pilot cost-sharing opportunities, probably most of which would be here in Alberta, but there might be some pilots that could take place managed by Alberta and Canada in other international jurisdictions.
Fantastic. Comes back to collaboration, doesn't it? Excellent. It's a big question. So does any, sort of before we close here, do any of the other panelists want to add to that? Great answer, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah, Wendy, this is David. I'd like to take a stab at that. So I think, you know, while EDC is involved on the supply side of this question, in working and collaborating with the industry network, not just in the oil and gas sector, but in other sectors like mining and consumer and so on, you know, there are groups across the country, you know, like Cove in Halifax, you know, like CRIN and PTAC in Alberta, Mars in Toronto. There's clusters of artificial intelligence companies all across the country. One of them is in Edmonton. And so EDC is looking to strengthen its relationships in that space. In terms of the program that I'm involved in at EDC, which is, our group is called Global Trade. And it's called the Business Connections Program, and we have a connection financing program. And so what we do basically is lend money to foreign companies as an incentive for them to share their needs with us so that we can there in turn introduce Canadian companies to them. And so if anyone wants to learn more about that, you know, they go to our website or they can reach out to me through LinkedIn and I'll be happy to connect them. But again, it goes back to collaboration. I think that where this type of, you know, whether it's you as a business person reaching out to your own network and collaborating, you know, with other like-minded business people. You know, another tip that I say as well is like, it doesn't matter so much who you reach out to in government. It's just foster a good contact somewhere in government. It doesn't really matter if it's EDC, the Alberta government, you know, another provincial government or the Trade Commissioner Service. Just, you know, connect with a hub and spoke type person that can connect you with other agencies as need be. You don't need to understand everything about what every department program does. You don't have time in the day for that. Connect with other business people that are likewise connected. And I think that's where the strength comes, is when we all leverage our strengths, you know, of say the Trade Commissioner Service's in market potential, EDC's financing, you know, the Alberta government's proximity to the Alberta companies, that's where we really win as a country and we win as a sector. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's what inspires me, is when I can finish the day knowing that I connected a company, that was a great day, you know?
Thank you, David. Great answers, you guys. Bimal, did you want to add anything to that?
Actually, Wendy, I think David and Tim did a fantastic job covering off that question. They brought out a ton of insights. So no, nothing more for me on that topic.
Excellent. Thank you. Great discussion, everyone. That brings our discussion about exporting excellence to a close. Thank you, David, Tim, and Bimal for joining us. Before we go, I would like to remind listeners that this is only one of 12 Energy Excellence Awards audio presentations. While this discussion here was about exporting, the others speak to excellence in project execution, technology and innovation alone, and environment, air, land, and water. I encourage you to listen to the others as well. You can actually visit dailyoilbulletin.com/EEA2020 for all the audio files and a collection of all champion articles. That webpage with all of its shareable material will be great information sources for us all. This is a time when we all need to understand in depth what excellence looks like and how to continuously strive to achieve. It was a pleasure hosting you today. Take care, everyone.